The following Dharma talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So I recently came across the Brahma Net Sutra, and I'd like to share some of this for Fusatsu, since it is the Buddha speaking about the heart of being, the precepts, that the precepts are the heart of our humanity. What it entails to be in harmony with many beings, because we are. And things happen when human beings come together. We know this. So these are, the precepts are the basic ways of guiding our body and our voice and our thought to live more joyfully and in harmony. And these are not just Buddhist. We can look in almost any of the religions and see similar guidelines of how to be with one another. So this is the Brahma Net Sutra was translated by Kumarajiva, who was born in 343. And he lived until 413, just to give you a sense of how far back this goes. He was a monk, a scholar, a great translator, did a lot on Nagarjuna, a missionary. He was born in the Hinayana practice, and then he became a Mahayana monastic and devoted himself to the Mahayana and translating Mahayana texts. And he was 20 when he was ordained. And he studied the Huayan school. And this teaching from the Brahma Net Sutra seemed to highlight an important turning on the path of how to cultivate our practice as a bodhisattva, one who dedicates our life to relieve suffering of living beings. So Brahma means highest or the supreme. And net, we all know net, something that catches. So what are we catching? What are you catching? Buddha teaches we are catching our views and putting wrong views to one side. That's what we're catching. The net that catches all these views and is the beginning of right view, and how to go through our lives with a stable mind, balanced, so we can clearly see what is right and wrong and be in harmony and not sidetracked by emotions. So this sutra is the beginning of one of the longer discourses of the Buddha, most likely going back to the words of the Buddha. There's many translations in different schools, and this one developed into the Vinaya, the monastic discipline, the precepts of the Mahayana monastics, and that we now have for the foundation of our practice, part of the Doshinji code that we live by, the Vinaya, how we live together in harmony. Because as soon as you get a group of people together, there's going to be troubles. So we need some balance. So this is spoken of from an enlightened view, and you might hear like how the Avatamsaka Sutra is written from the enlightened view of worlds within worlds within worlds. So in the first part, in part one, Vairocana Buddha expounds the mind ground, the fundamental nature of existence. And Vairocana Buddha says, I have cultivated this mind ground Dharma door for hundreds of eons. My name is Vairocana. I request all Buddhas to transmit my words to all sentient beings so as to open this path of cultivation to all. At that time, from his lion's throne in the lotus treasury world, Vairocana Buddha emitted rays of light. A voice among the rays is heard telling the Buddha seated on thousands of lotus petals, you should practice and uphold the mind ground Dharma door and transmit it to the innumerable Shakyamuni Buddhas, one after another, as well as to all sentient beings. Voila. Everyone should uphold, read, recite, and single-mindedly put its teachings into practice through the precepts. In part two, Shakyamuni Buddha expounds the Bodhisattva precepts. Precept against killing, against stealing, against sexual misconduct, false speech, taking intoxicants, clouding the mind, speaking about the offenses of anyone, disparaging others and praising oneself, stinginess, being generous, harboring anger, being in harmony, and slandering the three treasures. So the Buddha said to his disciples, just passing it on, there are 10 major bodhisattva precepts. If one receives the precepts but fails to recite them, they are not a bodhisattva, nor are they a seed of Buddhahood. I too recite these precepts. All bodhisattvas have studied them in the past, will study in the future, and are studying them now. I have explained the main characteristics of the Bodhisattva precepts. You should study and observe them with all your heart. With this one sincere heart, we study and observe these precepts so we can be in harmony with ourselves, with all beings. And the Buddha was often quoted as saying, I wouldn't tell you to do it if I wasn't doing it myself. And the title of this part is The Buddha Speaks the Brahmanet Sutra. So the title has an instructive pointer. Who is the Buddha that speaks this sutra? Vairocana Buddha is the primordial Buddha, seen as the embodiment of the Dharmakaya, the absolute body, and delivers this teaching on the original nature of mind for the benefit of the great assembly. What he said represents an infinitesimal part, the tip of a hair, of his innumerable teachings, as numerous as the grains of sand in the river Ganges. Who is the Bodhisattva? Don't look further than the tip of your nose. What will you realize? The original nature of mind. So Shakyamuni Buddha in part two delivers the teaching on the 10 grave precepts. And then there's 42 minor precepts. And this was every month on the full moon, sometimes twice a month. It is conveyed to us explicitly that by receiving the Buddhist precepts, we inhabit the realm of the Buddhas. So every Hosan, what do we do when we go off schedule? We recite the precepts. On Sunday, we will be participating in receiving the precepts in the Jukai ceremony. In other words, a shift will happen if we recite these precepts, in which we'll align ourselves and our lives in accord with the deepest respect and reverence for life. Our life will not be bound up with greed, hatred, and ignorance. With respect and restraint, we will cultivate the goodness of the empty field. Vairocana started it off. So maybe, thinking of that, it's clearer for you why we start with atonement. What has to happen first? What is caught in the net? We have to see the wrong views of our karma and say yes to everything that happened. Feel the burden of the emergent coming conscious moral weight. So things we might not quite know yet, hasn't quite come into consciousness. We know something, maybe a little bit. All from our beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. We need this alignment to know we have a responsibility and the recognition of our karma. Daito Roshi would say, we need to know what our bodies are doing and have done, what our voices are expressing and have expressed, and what our mind is experiencing. He says, as that is precisely the karma we are creating. Buddha spoke of two types of healthy people. In this world, there are two types of healthy people. The first is a person who doesn't create offenses. The second is a person who, upon creating offenses, knows how to atone and reform. These two are considered healthy people, because there is no defilement on their Dharma bodies. Upon reciting precepts, one will also know whether one has committed light or heavy offenses. There are different ways to atone and reform for light and heavy offenses. One will also know how to protect and guard them well. So this Brahmanet Sutras preached in Lord Brahma's heavenly realm. And before him hangs a net-like curtain, and in each node of the net is a pearl. And when the precepts are practiced well, it said the pearls emit light and illuminate the entire net. So, don't we see this? Don't we see this when we're in accord with things? Don't we see things light up? Don't we see how we do enlighten our environment? And how, when someone is filled with a lot of light, we feel that. So there's an exchange of radiance in our encounters. Also, it's said that the holes in the net are like limitless worlds of the universe. Just as each world is unique and its variations are infinite, so too is every Dharma and every being. So this net is what? All of our life, without exception. Your life, my life, you, every cell, every pore in your body is this net. In the Ten Directions, Master Zongji of Wansha said, "The world of the Ten Directions is a single bright pearl. You must understand intimately that this single bright jewel is everywhere throughout the Ten Directions. States high and low all arise within this single bright jewel. Awakened ones and ancestors teach that this is the essential point of the way of awake awareness. We live our lives through its richness, and it is the practice of those just beginning and those maturing within the way. Our everyday activities of wearing the robes and eating rice arise within this single bright pearl." Then sutra. What is a sutra? So the Sanskrit word usually literally means thread. And it's derived from the same English root as suture, like when you get stitches, or to sew. So kinhin is a walking sutra, right? We're all stitched together. So when somebody goes to the bathroom, the stitches go out in different places, but we're all still stitched together. And I was so appreciative in the May We Gather, the Asian Memorial, American Memorial service, how they walked out at the end with the string, the connection of them all together emanating from the Buddha. What is the thread that weaves the Dharma taught by the Buddhas and the potential of every human being to fully realize themselves? It's this sutra handed down to each of us as a necklace threaded with the jewels of the Bodhisattva precepts. This constant guideline that strings together all the Buddhas and ancestors, you, me, and every creature on this great earth, all together as a natural expression of our life, as the awakened nature that is our birthright. And these precepts have their home in generosity, right? They're life enhancing. When we hear the words that the precept that makes up a precept, it's to then bring them into our body with gratitude and respect. Affirm life, don't kill life. And we bring that into our embodiment and feel what that means with respect, and let it illuminate the functioning of our life to inspire us to have a right view and a right understanding. Allow them to help us to deeply reflect and examine ourselves and how we live, so we won't be an imitation of someone, and these won't become a list of shoulds and should not do. No one wants this, really. It's said in response to hearing the precepts, depending on our particular conditions and capacity, we may immediately resonate with them and begin to shift in accord with the precepts. It said, you may hear them and be touched by them on some level, but the seeds will not mature for a very long time. You may think them too restrictive and not worthy of your time and energies. So some people may hear them like that. However, experience has shown that the experience of true nature, although inherent in each of us, is not easily accessible, nor are our lives fully grounded in ethical discipline. So we study the precepts in the beginning, in the middle and in the end of our life, all the way through. It's continuous. And our understanding expands and deepens. And we're always opening and ripening as we study them. Think about it for some of you who've taken them years ago and what they were then and what they feel like now. The process is never finished because our lives are endlessly unfolding. There's no place for us to stick if we are to truly be liberated. So, reminding us again of what Buddha taught, if one receives the precepts but fails to recite them, they are not a bodhisattva, nor are they a seed of Buddhahood. I too recite these precepts. And because we engage the precepts, we come up against core beliefs that trap and snare us. That's the net. Like, did you ever hear yourself say, I've been practicing for years and I still do such and such? Or, I dealt with that long ago. I must be a failure because this issue is surfacing again. Or, I can't do this practice because I'm fundamentally so inadequate. Going even further, we sometimes say, if that person is practicing and still behaves that way, I want nothing to do with this hypocrisy. No Buddhist practice for me, thank you. And we just ditch it. What we often don't recognize is these expressions have a habitual reference point. What could that be? It may not occur to us that this reference point needs examination and is the cause of our stuckness. So this is one of the many reasons we have connections to great ancestors who have walked, why we have consistent study, why we work with a sangha, why we have teachers. So these patterns can be identified, our points of view challenged, and to point this out with us for more consideration and inquiry to shift. So we're not just being asked to shift to a particular point of from one particular point of view to another particular point of view, but to expand, to encompass all views, or fundamentally to experience the liberation of no view at all, like the faith mind is pointing to. To wear the necklace of the Buddha's precepts is to commit to a shift from living a life based on greed, hatred, and ignorance to a mind that abides in kindness, compassion, respect, and restraint. Vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. All beings who enter here wear the Tathagata's teachings, are wrapped in Buddha's teachings, saving all living beings. That's the emanation of light from the necklace. Every cell, every pore in your very body is this net, and it has no bounds. And I think that we all have a sense of how much stamina, determination, and unwavering commitment this requires. It's not casual. There are times we cannot comprehend what is being pointed to. And sometimes that's when we take a stand and we say, everyone else, we let everyone know how wrong and inadequate so many things are, including our teachers. And even we might say, I think the Buddha got it wrong. Sometimes the medicine of Dharma can seem too strong. But just keep on sitting. Just keep on going. This is a great secret teaching of the Buddha ancestors. Don't quit. Just keep going. And I love this last verse chanted in the Gatha on Receiving the Precepts. When sentient beings receive the sila, the precepts, they enter the realm of the Buddhas. This is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, we are the children of the Buddha. So that's that recognition on the deepest level that our original nature is the same as the original Buddha, Vairocana. And that we have entered a territory of unlimited expanse in which we will turn and be turned by the Bodhisattva precepts and the kindness and respect that it calls forth in each of us. We just keep going. We just keep turning. And I often feel like the monastic kesa, if you ever see us do it, is precisely that. Just keeps turning. Turning inside and around. It's reminding us of the Bodhisattva precepts. All Buddhas have studied them in the past, will study in the future, and are studying them now. I have explained the main characteristics of the Bodhisattva precepts. You should study and observe them with all your heart.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.